Hey everybody in the Reddit sales community. I am excited to introduce John Buckness to you. He's the Director of Training and Development at NetChecks, and we connected earlier last week, and you know, really I'm really excited to introduce him and be able to pick his brain so that, you know, we can spread the wealth of knowledge in Reddit. So welcome, John. How are you doing today?
Awesome. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Davidson. Very excited to be on the podcast today.
Yeah, and I'm excited to learn more about you. You know, you definitely have a very, like, conversational. It's very easy to, you know, to speak to you. Like, I can definitely see that a lot of people probably, you know, feel at ease when they're speaking to you and working with you, I'm sure.
Thank you for the compliment.
No problem. So yeah, walk us through your background a little bit, you know, sort of like how you got into the industry, and you know, it looks like you have some pretty solid experience in a lot of different types of events. I mean, lot of different types of verticals, but you know, it seems like you're doing pretty well for yourself there.
it's interesting. I grew up in a household where my father was a sales old school guy, Rolodex, Excel spreadsheets, you know, bought a van so he could carry his product around and everything else underneath the sun, never thinking that I would ever get into sales. My goal and dream as a child growing up was to get into the film industry. Unfortunately, what you realize really quickly is in the film industry, you actually have to sell. You have to sell your script. You have to sell your idea. You have to pitch to network executives and production houses on a regular basis, and I couldn't do it. I was way too nervous, had butterflies in the stomach, introvert by nature, et cetera. So what drove me into the outside sales world was to build a skill set around the ability to pitch eventually a movie script idea. Along the way, though, I actually fell in love with the science and the art of sales and haven't looked back since, and it's been over probably 15 years since that time frame. And to catapult on what you talked about in regards to the different industries and verticals, I have bounced around a lot. And one of the biggest things that I think has been my saving grace is understanding the science of sales. If you're not an art person and you don't have that suave Casanova personality and you're willing to be a student of the game, as they say, and really understand the science of sales, there's no reason why you can't be successful. So I hope that kind of sets up a good framework as to my history.
Yeah, and it falls in perfectly because it sounds like you do a lot of the training and really teaching sales to the newer employees and developing their, you know, a lot of the skill sets that they have, right? So it sounds like it was a natural transition for you.
It was. It was interesting. We were going through a unique phase in our organization where we identified that we needed a individual to truly help teach, train, and continue to impact the sales force on a regular basis. When I first started with the organization roughly over 3.5 years ago, we didn't really have a dedicated trainer support team. We had more so of a, hey, come to corporate, here's our product, here's a phone book, good luck, go sell. And when I took over the role, I made sure to realize that at the end of the day, our organization is built around a remote outside salesperson. So these individuals are on an island by themselves, and I need to give them tools so that they are successful. Whether I'm available via text message or not, they can go to some type of resource to overcome any obstacles, any hurdles, or get out of any quicksand that they're currently in to move the deal forward. And so my biggest focus has been on creating a environment where our sales team has that ability to grow at their own pace, has the ability to find answers to questions, whether that's on Sunday while they're watching a football game or in the middle of a sales presentation. And so a lot of what I've done in this role is to create an infrastructure for the team more than anything, which I've been very thankful to do because it's allowed me to grow as an individual and push boundaries and really think more critically about how can I deliver information and knowledge in a just-in-time kind of format.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. I do think that when you teach, you know, it definitely expedites the learning process, right? Because I think, you know, learning, you know, we could read as many books as you want, but, you know, teaching it really, I think, amplifies the learning curve and sort of it's like a much more accelerated way of learning, right?
It is. When we designed the training program the first time about a year ago, we thought we knew exactly what we were doing. You know, we're in a lab and it's a controlled environment. So we think we know what a sales rep needs in order to be successful. And at the end of every one of my training classes, which we run on a regular monthly basis, I constantly ask for feedback from the students, the sales reps. And what I learned over time was what we cooked up in the kitchen was not the reality. And our training program has evolved over and over again to making sure that it meets what a sales rep needs in order to be successful. And by having that passion and our sales rep seeing that passion from a management point of view, it's allowed them to have faith in the organization, have faith in the product that they're selling, and have faith in the sales process to really flourish and grow as a salesperson. So from a management point of view, I know the old adage is you expect what you inspect, but the reality is you need to collaborate with your sales reps and understand where they are at. Each sales rep has a different point of view, and each sales rep has a different learning curve and different needs, just like your buyers do. And you have to almost approach your sales reps the same way that you approach a prospect and understand what is that sales rep's buying criteria to buy into the company and the organization.
Interesting. So you know, like you said, it's always evolving. And so that's a good point. I do think a lot of companies have a one-size-fits-all training program. So I do think that, you know, like you said, like that's not the best way to do things. I do think that, you know, companies should be more agile and sort of like, you know, depending on what the person needs. Like you said, everyone is at a different place and, you know, will need different resources. So, I mean that's got to be something that, you know. So I guess, like, do you subscribe to like a sales methodology? Like, do you use like challenger sales, or like, I guess, like, what is there like a particular approach that you have, or you know, is it sort of like your own that you've created by yourself?
Well, to help build a frame, I'll explain. We're a technology company that specializes in the HR payroll sector, so. What we sell is, at the end of the day, nothing sexy. It's a back office product that's really utilized at the end of the day by only a few key decision makers in an organization. It does, however, touch all of the personnel of an organization. So when it comes to sales philosophy and sales strategies and methodologies, I approach it more of the same way that you approach mixed martial arts, in the sense that I can be the greatest boxer on planet Earth, but the second that I step into the ring with an MMA person, they're going to use Aikido, Judo, Krav Maga, everything else on me, and I'm going to be knocked on my ass. So we do have a process. It's more of a guardrail, and it gives the reps the ability to build their personality, and it acts more as a skeleton than anything. So the skeleton is there for them, and they can build the personality and their own muscle around the skeleton. But from a methodology, we utilize actually all of them throughout the entire sales process, everything from old school spin selling tactics to consultative to insight to challenger to everything else in between. we really don't try to stick to one, because that one style may not work with a representative. It may not work at the end of the day with a prospect. And we try to really approach it, as I said, with that mixed martial arts analogy.
I completely agree. I'd sort of take like a little bit of all of them, and then, you know, obviously depending on the situation or depending on the circumstances and like where we're at in the sales cycle, you know, I do think there's not one best way. I definitely think, like you said, it depends on the person and the prospect that you're speaking to, and you know, some prospects like need a lot more handholding, and some of them need to be challenged and sort of like that authoritative. And, you know, so it definitely depends on who you're speaking to. Cool. Okay. Well, I mean, so are you also in charge of, like, you know, interviewing people and kind of growing your team and all that as well? Is that one of your responsibilities?
It's not, actually, and I purposely chose not to. My official title of the company is Director of Training, Development, and Productivity. I have decided, when I took over the role and kind of built out my personal responsibilities with my CEO and vice president of sales, that I did not want to be a part of the interview process. I'd rather a new hire candidate come to me fresh without any type of preconceived biases about that candidate. And this gives me an ability to really put that candidate's best interest in mind instead of having any type of judgment during that interview process. It allows me to understand what are their motivations, what's their skill set, how are they best being coached, rather than saying, knowing out of the gate that this individual has X number of years experience in the industry versus another candidate, et cetera. This allows me to have fresh eyes on the candidate. And throughout the onboarding and training development process with us, which runs about 6 weeks, they're underneath my wing, so I'm constantly reporting back to their manager to give them not a thumbs up, thumbs down, but a more of, hey, these are the skill sets that your candidate, your new hired employee has. Here's where you probably need to focus on a day-to-day operation versus on a monthly basis.
Gotcha. No, that's a good way to look at it. I do think that, you know, if you approach, I mean, even with anything, when you're approaching prospects, I do think it's sometimes good to not prejudge them, because you never know. Like, you know, there's times that prejudged leads and, you know, they actually turn out to be like a really qualified opportunity. So I do think similarly that that's a good way to approach it, so that, you know, you're not missing out on any potential, you know, I guess they would say like hidden gems.
Exactly.
Cool. Okay. That's interesting. I mean, so, you know, it sounds like you worked with a lot of people. I mean, what would you say are some of the differences between like people that are, you know, I guess you would consider top performers, or people that are sort of like middle of the pack, like, you know, because it sounds like you do, you know, you do have a relationship with a lot of different managers and all the directors and VPs. Like, have you found any common either personality traits or attitudes or mindsets, like with people that are just doing extremely well, or people that are sort of, you know, I guess middle of the pack?
It's a great question. It's actually a topic as a management team we discuss on a regular basis. And the discussion always centers around, is experience worth more than skill set? Or is skill set more important than just drive and determination? Personally, the results that we've seen as an organization, I can't speak for other companies out there, is that when a sales rep has two really important things, the first being a student mentality, are they continuing to learn? Are they willing to put their ego in the back pocket and learn about other skills, sales styles, skill sets, et cetera? That's where they're going to flourish. They're going to learn a new trick of the trade, a new tool to put in their toolkit. To me, that and our management team, that is one of the biggest identifiers of a successful sales rep. The second is a rep that is willing to take initiative rather than wait for direction, mm-hmm. rather than wait for ideas. They're willing to try something. They're willing to go out on a limb, and we don't criticize. And I feel lucky at our organization that we really don't criticize when a sales rep takes risks. We prefer our reps to take risks and to try something new, try a new idea. And if they mm-hmm. do burn their hand on the stove, so be it. And that's okay. But at the end of the day, we're giving them the ability to grow as an individual because we want to find people that have that entrepreneur mindset that realize they can operate essentially as a business within a business.
Okay. Yeah, so like you said, that entrepreneurial mindset is very important, right? Like you're running, like even though you're part of an organization, you know, you still have to run it like if you're the CEO and that, you know, there's a lot that lies within your, you know, instead of having to rely on everyone else, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you. I do notice, you know, from just being very, you know, picking the brains of a lot of the people that are extremely successful, I do notice that, you know, even at the age of 40 or 50 or 60, you know, they're still continuously taking more courses, you know, whether it's like emotional intelligence or just reading up on, like we mentioned, some of the newer sales methodologies. And then, you know, people that are always, you know, checking out the Reddit sales forum, like people that are still active even though they've been doing it for 30 years, like, yeah, that's definitely a common theme I've noticed as well. Okay.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so tell me a little bit more about, you know, so, like, tell me about, like, your company and you know, how it's going and sort of, like, what separates you guys from you know, some of your competitors. You know, obviously it sounds like it's a pretty crowded space. You know, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of technology companies that are working with the human capital, you know, in the industry. So how would you say, like, you guys differentiate yourselves from everyone else?
It's a great question. And it was a fun exercise we went through actually 2 years ago. We rounded up our entire management team and we realized that our operating principle and our mission was exactly the same as every other one of our competitors. We weren't truly any different. We were just a different color, a different shade. And so we had to take a hard look internally at how are we going to be different? How are we going to act different and look different to our clients and to our prospects? And so there was a lot of risk involved. And the biggest way that we realized some type of differentiator was by doing stuff that our competitors were more afraid to try to do. In our industry, in the human capital management world, a popular fallback is to offer these added value services that unfortunately burn your bridge with potential business partners. And rather than doing that, we decided, you know what, we're just going to play specifically in a niche role of being a technology provider and focus on providing a better product that creates a mechanism that our partners can use to go out and win new business. So in a way, we were able to actually duplicate our sales force via these partnership channels. And it's been a huge, huge benefit to us. And it's already paid off in dividends in less than a few years, to the point where we've been able to actually duplicate that methodology with other channel partners that we never even thought were possible. One of the biggest influences on that decision-making process was actually a book called The Blue Ocean Strategy, where we realized that our competitors play in a certain space and really hang around a certain spot in the ocean, as they say, and we decided, okay, we have to venture into new ocean. And that new ocean may be dangerous, it may be different, it may be uncomfortable, but we've got to try something, because if we continue to be stagnant at where we're at, we're going to eventually die out, and there's not going to be enough market share to go around.
Hmm. So do you guys have a particular niche that you guys, is it like by employee count, or is it by like, are you working specifically with like technology companies, or do you not want to share that
It's okay. I can give away some industry insight. I can't give away too much, obviously, in my role.
now?
But the key is we did a lot of analytics and we dug in deep to understand who is the type of customer and what is the profile of the customer that we help the most. And let's find more of them. And that's what we were able to do. Now, once we identify the ideal customer for us long term, being a SaaS provider, I'm sure other Redditors will understand this. You really don't make your money, your profit on the deal in the first couple of years as a SaaS provider. It takes about 2, 3, 5 years before you see the return on investment from the client acquisition point of view. So once we identify that ideal client, we needed to identify how do we attract and retain that client. And that's where those business partners came into place. So we started to build out and whiteboard almost a hemisphere, solar system, if you will, of whose other worlds do we play in? Who else's, orbit do we potentially touch and pull from a gravity point of view? And that allowed us to identify those ideal business partners. And by identifying those business partners, we were able to create true channels that were advantageous, a win-win-win for all three parties. So it was a win for the business partner, it was a win for us, but it was more importantly a win for the client, the shared client at the end of the day. And that's what's most important. If we're not fixing a problem, what problem are we solving? Then we're no better than the last vendor. And that's part of our sales process. We really take an honest look at, are we helping them or are we the same as the last vendor they had?
You bring up a good point. I do think in today's age, with technology and, channel partners and just really being able to leverage partners is essential for any company, especially in technology. And if you don't have that, that's such a huge revenue channel that you're missing out on. So that's good that you guys, realize that and you're able to really like capitalize on that and, take advantage of that, because that is something like I've been seeing that's even more prevalent, as the years go by, just because of internet and people are in just how it is nowadays. Because people are able to, do research, and the more you're out there, and the more it is, the easier it is for you to be found. And I do think, like you said, to create a win-win situation, and both parties, take it, or both parties benefit from that. So that's a great point. So I was gonna ask you, like a little bit more of like the industry in general. Like, do you, obviously you guys are heavy focused on the technology. Like, do you see any trends in the human capital management space, like that you're seeing, that that you think potentially is gonna really disrupt or change a lot of things? It sounds like you guys are a lot more tech focused than maybe some of your competitors out there.
It's a great question, and it actually is a good segue into something that my father said to me a long time ago when I first had a conversation with him about getting into the sales world. He told me a long time ago that you need to get into a position to sell what businesses need and not what they want. And by understanding that phrase in my adult life, it helped me to realize that the industry that I'm in today is going to be ongoing and ever-changing, meaning that the legislation and regulation that organizations and businesses face today is not going to be the same that they face tomorrow. Because our government continues to change the requirements of operating as a business, that means our clients will continue to need us no matter what, at every step of the way, at every juncture, regardless of who's president and who's in Congress and everything else in between. So our industry is, yes, ever changing, it doesn't mean that we're the industry leader. We're never trying to be the first person across the finish line, as crazy as that sounds. Instead, we try to be the second and third person across the finish line that actually builds the product that truly solves the problem. And the way that we do that is through continuous client feedback. We have mechanisms in place to allow our clients to collaborate and share ideas with our development team so we can get feedback directly from the market. And it allows us to pivot when needed and it's necessary. Now, bearing that in mind, using the Henry Ford quote, if we had listened to our to our customers, they would have asked for a faster horse. So there is sometimes where we are creating something that is a new technology, a new idea, a new method of processing internally. And so sometimes there is a hurdle when presenting that idea. But just like the smartphone has only been around for 10 years, if we present the idea in the form that our clients can see the value in it, that's the win across the board. So the human capital management industry itself is, yes, ever-changing. We don't necessarily need to be the industry leader. We just need to do it right at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you get this question all the time, but, you know, you guys are definitely on the smaller side, like, obviously compared to, like, the Paychex and ADPs of the world. I guess, like, how do you, I guess, compete with those guys, you know, because it sounds like they have a lot more resources, they have a lot more manpower, and, I mean, you know, I'm sure there are some differentiators and what sets you guys apart. I mean, I guess, like, how would you say you differentiate yourself from those big guys?
It's a great question because I think every sales rep realizes they're in one of three buckets. They're either at the kind of industry leader in their market, the AKA gorilla in the room. And in our market, there are the two major gorillas, Big Red and Big Blue. The second bucket is you either end up at a company that is a more regional player. It's more of a boutique shop that's able to provide white glove service where they know your name and your kid's name, or you end up where I'm at, this company that is willing to take risks, this company that's willing to push the envelope, this company that really listens to their client base in ways that a lot of our competitors are not. Now, again, like I said earlier, we don't, you know, listen to every request and implement every request because we have customers across the country. But we do take them seriously, and by having their voices heard, it's a great mechanism to show customer loyalty. The other element, too, is that by realizing where we fall in one of those three buckets, it allows us to identify our strengths and weaknesses. So we never step into the alley expecting arriving to a gunfight with a knife. We make sure that we know where we win. We've identified our sweet spot. We've identified where we can help a client more than anything. And by making sure that we have the client's best interest in mind, it allows us to be more successful instead of trying to go after those flagship accounts just because they're a flagship account. It allows us to really bring in the revenue needed to have for a very nice holiday season, as they say. Put some good food on the table and some good presents underneath the tree.
Gotcha. So you're not, you know, necessarily going after like the whales, right? Is it more like SMB and you're going after more mid-market and, you know, not like the Fortune 100 of the world, right?
It's interesting. We have a very specific sweet spot that our sales reps are trained to focus on. Along the way, what's been interesting is because of our channel partnerships, we end up getting introduced to a lot of those whales that we know we don't win very well. We don't compete very well against some of the bigger players. So there's statistics, right? And from an operations point of view, which is my role, I can say, all right, your odds of winning this opportunity are 7%. Your odds of winning this opportunity are 14%. And there are obviously outliers in every situation. At the end of the day, we try to educate our sales reps with, hey, if you're going to go into combo every single day, here's where you need to focus your energy and your effort on in order to be successful, rather than trying to put lipstick on a pig.
Yeah. No, I think that's a very fair point. I think, you know, I would say, I mean, obviously there was a lot to take away, but I think knowing your niche or knowing your ideal customer profile is, I would say, more than half the battle. I would say that's 70% of the battle in most sales positions. And I think a lot of companies, they fail to recognize that, or they don't, you know, they don't double down on that, and they try to go into new industries and new verticals, which I'm not saying you shouldn't do that, but I think, you know, like having a niche is important, and really identifying it and, you know, leveraging case studies. Like, you know, I was looking at your website. It seems like you guys do a really good job with, you know, the innovative aspects and the customer service and, like you said, the white glove service. But, you know, I do think, like, when companies try to stray too far away from their core and, you know, their core customer base, that's when I do see a lot of, like, companies that, you know, do not hit the revenue goals, or, you know, they try it and then they fail, and then they eventually go back to their original customer base. And, you know, I've noticed, like, for me, like, identifying the perfect customer is always the first thing I do when the first 10 days of the job, you know, and just really hearing the stories, really, like, studying the case studies, and it's helped me to really be able to build, like, a strong story and a strong you know, identity to be able to talk to the similar types of customers that have similar problems, like you said.
Absolutely. If I could give any recommendation to any sales rep, if your company does not give you what their sweet spot is, go to your service team and ask them who is the perfect ideal customer, who calls the least with the least amount of problems, with the least amount of issues, who's the delightful customer that you want to deal with on a regular basis. It will allow you to identify that perfect customer profile very quickly and give you an idea of where on the dartboard to aim for.
Yeah, and that's another good point, too. I do think sometimes some organizations lack the communication between the service team, and, you know, sometimes the sales team is kind of, like, so siloed that they don't talk to the rest of the company, and where there's, like you said, there's so much valuable information just being able to communicate and talking to the account managers and talking to the, you know, after the sale folks to really be able to get the feedback. And, you know, I do think a lot of companies could do a much better job doing that.
Well, like, again, it depends. I mean, some of the larger organizations out there, it may not be a part of their onboarding and training. So it goes back to the earlier question of the two greatest qualities a strong sales rep can have is, a student mentality, but secondly, the initiative to reach out to that service team and introduce themselves and pick their brain and understand who's that ideal client long term.
Right, that's extremely true. I do think, you know, but, you know, as you know, being in operations and systems and data driven and all that, like, it does help if the company, you know, does have that. But yes, you know, if you do have that initiative, you can be like what you do, like create your own opportunities and create your own role where you can be the point person for that. So that's a really good point. And yeah, so, you know, I just wanted to ask you a little bit more about, like, sort of like the culture. You know, I know you did mention, like, a lot, but, you know, like, how would you describe the culture at NetChecks, and, you know, how are you able to, like, influence it and contribute to it and sort of build the culture there?
It's a great question. It's actually one of the reasons I got attracted to the company originally. The way I landed at NetChecks was I was about ready to start my own business and had questions about the differences between W-2s and 1099s and taxes and everything else underneath the sun. And the sales manager locally in Atlanta, Georgia, is an old friend of mine. And as a quid pro quo for her explaining the differences to me, I promised to sit down with the co-founder of the company. And a 15-minute quote-unquote conversation turned into a two-hour-long talking shop, where at the end of it, I was offered a position and absolutely fell in love with the fact that this organization gets it. They understand that, not that salespeople are the gods or rock stars in a company, but sales is what builds revenue, and the revenue is what allows for other opportunities internally. But more important than that is the recognition of hard work equals, work hard, play hard mentality. And yeah. So from a culture standpoint, I feel lucky in the sense that we still have a little bit of that mom and pop feel, where it's a family kind of organization, even though we have almost 200 employees, but yet we still have that infrastructure that a number of larger organizations have as well. However, all that being said, I think that as an individual within an organization, you have the ability to create culture. You have the ability to impact other people that you directly cut to on a regular basis. Before my role here, I worked at a Fortune 500, and it didn't feel like a Fortune 500, though, because I realized that at the end of the day, I could create the environment around me that I wanted to be a part of. And so from a culture standpoint, yes, a lot of it is truly derived from the leadership team. But whether you're, at the bottom rung of the ladder or in middle management, you can realize that you can still create an impact, and that impact can still help other people, and it can be a force to reckon with, and it can grow exponentially. Misery loves company, but so does happiness, so does positivity. So,
yeah, I mean, that's such a powerful message. I do think, you scan the subreddit sometimes and you get all these like negative questions, and it's like, man, you're asking the wrong questions, right? It's like, instead of asking complaining about your job, it's like actually just like what you do, you actually take the initiative. You have so much more impact and influence than you think, and just actually create the culture that you want, instead of talking about how this culture sucks, and it's like, well, the common thread here is you. So do something about it, right?
Mm-hmm. And obviously, if there is truly negative culture, jump ship. There's nothing wrong with realizing after trying to create an impact that no matter what you do, it's not going to change. And that's an unfortunate thing. There are a few companies out there where that is a reality. And that is unfortunate, but the benefit of being a sales representative is that you're always going to be in demand. If you've got, in my opinion, those two skill sets, student mentality and initiative, you're worth more to another organization that will be open and accepting and have what you're looking for.
Hmm. Yeah, it's true. If you're a good salesperson, like you said, someone who's always learning, always looking to improve their skills on a daily basis, and someone who is going to create their own opportunities, there'll be people knocking on your door every day. It's just because of that. So that is true. I do think there's probably no other position out there that is highly needed or highly recruited as sales. Like you said, because they bring in the revenue and they ultimately help grow a company, which creates more opportunities, and other other departments can grow and everything else can grow. So that's a really, really strong point that you're making there.
One of my mentors said that if you're not being offered a position once a month in the middle of one of your sales presentations, you're not that good of a salesperson.
Yeah, so true. Yeah, like you said, like people do know what when they spot a gem. So, you'll know if you're one of those. That's for sure. And I was gonna ask you more about how you use the knowledge from the Reddit sales community. How has that helped you in your career? And how often do you look at it, or you know, how have you been able to use all that to be able to grow and learn and, you know, work on your craft, like you said?
It's a great question because I would love to spend more time in the community. It's in the last year I've noticed it actually flourish more than it has over the last 5 years that I've been a member of Reddit. The key, I think, to any type of seeking of knowledge is to go in two aspects. One, with unbiased. You have to realize that there are going to be ideas and concepts out there that may not jive with your personal opinion, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. The world of sales is ever evolving in the sense that your approach, your style, the methodology, etc., does evolve and it does change with the time and with the pulse of the market. And then that's why, as salespeople, it's really important to continue to be a student. I may, in my role, be looked at as a leader, mentor, whatever you want to call it, but I'm still a student. I still have skill sets that I need to grow and develop. So specifically to the sales Reddit forum and community, I use it as a pulse mechanism. I use it as a way on a weekly basis to get an idea of where's the mentality of salespeople out there? What is the hot strategy, the hot tactic to use, and how can I take that and feed it to my team so we can see potentially some results? And again, it's not a one size fits all. The flavor of the week may only work for a certain subset, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. At the end of the day, it's being open and willing to try new things and step out of that comfort zone and continue to expand that skill set that I think is so important. The community itself is, I think, growing, and there will be more and better things to come down the road as more professionals and experienced individuals join it. In the beginning, it seemed to be a lot of entry-level people looking for guidance and advice, which then led to more experienced individuals willing to share those ideas and those concepts. And so it's really created a nice catalyst of growth in the sense of just the sheer knowledge you can gain from it. If I was a entry-level person, I would dedicate an hour a week to dig in and find those hot topics, the most popular ones, and try them and see how I can make them a part of my process, make them a part of my talk track, a part of my game, and just give it a shot, unbiased and without any type of preconceived notion. You'd be surprised at some of the good ideas out there.
Yeah, that's a good point. I like how you're able your vision and you're able to really analyze how, you know, be like the market, because the market was there were so many new people asking for advice and asking for feedback, and you know, just as a natural, you know, like with any supply and demand, you know, the demand, since the demand was there, you know, a lot of the more experienced guys that are more kind enough to help were able to help, and it's just this ongoing back and forth of just it's growing and growing because, you know, there's more questions, so there needs to be more experts in various different types of sales and verticals and industries to be able to add and give their two cents. So I like how you know, you're able to paint that picture. That's really cool. Yeah, so thanks, Sean. You know, I really appreciate you like giving us so much advice. This is definitely one of my favorite episodes, just because every minute of it was very valuable, and I think it was, you know, not only just for the entry level folks, but I think at any stage in your sales career, I think all of this is a good reminder, and you know, I thought it was actually one of the most informative podcasts that we've done so far.
Wow. Thank you. it's a lofty bar to set. At the end of the day, there's a question I challenge the audience to try to answer when they look in the mirror as they brush their teeth and get ready for bed is, what type of impact did you make today? And by asking that question, I believe that that's what's accelerated my success in sales and just in life in general, is what type of impact have I made today? And that challenges me every day to kind of push myself in ways that I've never thought possible and grow as an individual.
Wow, that's definitely one of those, like, you print it out in bold, like 100 font letters, and just place it on your mirror when you're getting ready for work, or you know, like on your computer screen. definitely, that's a good post-it to have for sure.
I stole it from somebody else, so it's not mine. I can't take credit for it. So.
You're too humble. You're too far too kind. Well, John, I was going to ask you a couple more questions. So what's a question that you think more of the community should ask? Like you know, like as a sales professional, like especially like entry level, what questions do you think they should ask themselves, or you know, even ask mentors or you know, more experienced sales folks, but haven't asked yet in the community?
I think as an entry-level person, there's a lot of great questions out there. And what I really enjoy is as I you know, kind of cursory go through the post, and I have an interview lined up with this company, how should I prepare? Or I'm thinking about jumping into this industry, what's the feedback? I don't think there's any bad questions or any better question to ask from an entry-level point of view. I think a better question to ask is, what more can those of us that are the quote-unquote old dogs do to share ideas and concepts? Because I know personally for myself, it was a little bit of a comfort zone to start posting my experience and my philosophy and my personal stories on a subreddit. I know I'm technically supposed to be one of those older millennials, but I've never been the best at sharing ideas and concepts on a social media format. And I think if more of the old guard was willing to put information out there, we could continue to see not just the age of information, but the age of knowledge. And that way, then there would be a little bit more of a growth across the board. A trait that I think would be better is to, regardless of your skill set and your experience level or anything else in between, is it goes back to challenge yourself. Make a list of what is your comfort zone, what's outside of that comfort zone, and pick one and just focus on that one item and find mentors to reach out to and learn how to overcome those obstacles, those hurdles, that quicksand that is there in the mind but is nothing more than just gained through experience.
Yeah. Man, I don't think there's a better way to end this. That's great. That's a good point. I do think, you know, being a little bit more, like, I guess I would be considered like a much older millennial as well, and I do think that, you know, it is like, I do feel comfortable sometimes in the sense that, you know, I guess I'm at a stage in my sales career where, you know, it's not as the same as like the first year of sales, right, where you're like sweating when you're calling that, you know, that seed level, you're just like, oh my God, like this guy makes so much money. I know so for me, you know, it's definitely a lot more comfortable, but that's a good point. Maybe I should set bigger goals and have a bigger challenge so that, you know, I can be sweating profusely more, right? Maybe that's a sign for me to try to challenge myself more and set much more lofty goals, I would say.
Put a little more weight on the bar, as they say. And try to break your record.
Yeah, good point. Well, thank you so much, John. Once again, I really, really found a lot of value in our conversation, and I know a lot of people will too. And so what's the best way for people to reach out to you? What do you prefer?
Sure. I mean, I accept all types of communication, so you can find me on LinkedIn, John Butchness. As mentioned, I work for a company called NetChecks. The picture you'll probably find is me with my grizzly beard. In Reddit itself, listed underneath the call sign Sufi_surfer. But at the end of the day, anybody who wants to ask a question, I'd be more than willing to at least share an idea. I can't promise I'll get right back to you within the minute, but I try to respond as quickly as possible. I've got 50 sales reps that I report to. So unfortunately, they come first, but I promise I will definitely respond.
Cool. Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate your service and you giving back to the community. And you know, I definitely think you embody the Reddit sales community in terms of just like spreading, you know, being able to give back and also, you know, your humility, your humbleness. You know, it's definitely a trait I've noticed amongst like the top sales performers, and especially in the Reddit community, like just like always willing to give back, but still, you know, confident, but still very humble at the same time. It's an awesome trait that you guys have.
Well, you're welcome. You're welcome.
All right. So hopefully, you know, we'll cross paths. That'll be cool. I was thinking about maybe, you know, as the community grows, maybe I'll set up some sort of like events. Maybe we can have like a regional event where like it could be like all of the Northeast and then the one for the West Coast, and maybe eventually in a year or so, if there's enough interest, maybe create like a whole conference where we can meet somewhere in the middle. I think that'll be cool. That's my vision.
Absolutely. I've got plenty of office space to host an event like that. I got a big old conference room, so be happy to help.
Okay. Yeah. That's something that we could definitely coordinate. Maybe we could have, you know, someone be, you know, in charge of certain regions, and then we can all like get together and try to plan something really cool. Maybe like a weekend thing. That'll be neat.
Sounds exciting. I'm in. You sold me.
All right. Thanks, John. Appreciate it. Take care.
You bet, Davidson. Anytime.
Thanks. All right.